this is.
Wow!
What a week.
What a week. Politricks. Politricks.
Welcome back to Wow, What a Week, hashtag Politricks. For some, politics and the analysis of political happenings can be a bit tiring. However, with last week's Politricks, one of our fans couldn't decide if it was brief or if he was enjoying it a bit too much. What we can tell you is that our resident commentator definitely enjoys throwing more light on the sometimes shady arena that is Politricks. So please give a warm welcome back to our energetic evaluator, Botsang Modimowame Muilwa. Botsang.
Yes, morning, Brother Fresh, and morning to the viewers and followers and subscribers and critics.
Another incredible episode last week.
Very incredible.
Yo.
I still don't know if it beats the other one, but it was an incredible episode. The reaction has been very good.
But Akiri, that's what life ought to be, that you need to hit a high and then chase that high,
and chase
that milestone.
That bar.
Yes. Because if you don't set a bar, you'll always operate at below what the bar ought to be. So I think our responsibility to especially the viewers and people who like debating with especially yourself is the bar must be always up there.
Yeah, it sets a very high tone. But anyway, I'm happy when they are happy.
Yes, sir.
I think it's going to be worse this week, if not better. I'm telling you, hectic.
Let's start with the biggest irony of the week. COP28 happening in UAE, where they pump billions of barrels a year of oil, and where people flew in probably in more jets and private jets than we see outside of Davos.
Exactly.
But let's talk about climate and climate change.
Fresh. How ironic. A bunch of over 80,000 people, which consist of, to be exact, more than 1,000 leaders of the world, whether politically or climate or business, they jump into over 2,000 jets to go to the United Arab Emirates, the capital, Dubai. You know, these are slave queens of the politics and the industry. They go to Dubai, and they're going to discuss what? The effects of pollution and climate change.
Yeah.
To go there, just to get there with the media and supporters, there's more than 80,000 people with over 2,000 jets. How much fuel was burned in a country that burns thousands, if not trillions, of barrels of oil in the world, and they want to come and tell the world they're going to sit there and discuss how
and
to
save
clean
us.
The world.
And save us.
And save us.
And unfortunately, we need to add another dimension here. Because a lot of these things become talk shops, there's a lot of hot air. I'm sure it only affected climate.
Exactly. it's a sad state of affairs in the world that we still allow business people, exploiters and polluters of the world, industrialists and politicians to go and sit and make decisions on our behalf. And South Africa, again, is falling into the trap of signing another or entering into another international treaty or arrangement or agreement, being pushed by what? Being pushed by the world most industrialized countries like the United States, like Japan, like Germany, and so forth. And we go on and we have a stall and we, by the way, on the record to our viewers and listeners, the United Nations Secretary General, Antonio Guterres, he announced that South Africa is not the first, is the only country that produced a plan towards the cleaning of the world. You know, a fully detailed, we are the only country in the entire world that presented that plan to the United Nations on how we are going to clean the environment.
So we're busy giving a damn in a world that doesn't give a damn.
They don't give a damn. We are not the worst polluters.
Our power stations are not operating optimally to reduce our greenhouse emissions, which is one of the reasons we have load shedding.
Exactly.
That other countries don't care.
And actually, despite them not operating optimally, this plan that President Ramaphosa, the Minister of Trade and Industry, have presented to COP28, it also talks of further decommissioning, further power stations in the country by 43% come the year 2032 or 2035. So we are going to shut down more power stations. But let me tell you what is going on. This is the whole plan to prepare for the IPPs to take over the country. And we have sat down, me and you, we have talked about it, and everybody else have said, there is nothing wrong with nuclear energy. Actually, we need nuclear energy. The Zuma administration wanted to have nuclear energy long before. It is cleaner, it's more, you know, advanced, it is more readily available, it can produce more electricity and energy. Then there's wind. Energy from windmills like we have in the Eastern or Western Cape. Then there's nuclear solar. Now, the Americans and the Europeans, they're sitting there and crying for our coal, first grade coal. That is on trucks going to Richards Bay, to Maputo Harbor, to go and do it and keep lights on in Germany. Keep them warm during winter. It's winter now in Europe and the Americas. And they want to keep on by whose coal? South African first grade quality coal.
RB1 coal.
Exactly.
That's now, like the highest grade coal.
The same.
Also people, because our power stations can't use RB1.
Yeah.
Because unfortunately, there's also this false narrative that we have load shedding because we're sending our good coal overseas.
No.
Our power stations cannot operate RB1 coal. That is why we're exporting it.
Exactly. And that was purposefully done, that our power stations should be built and not be maintained and kept, you know, abreast of the developments in the industry. You can use the coal that we have. So we're exporting it now. The same countries that are sitting in Dubai telling the African people and African leaders with suits in that hot place, saying to them, please go and use the solar and the sun in your countries. Don't use the coal. Don't use it. You are polluting the air. The polluters of the air tell people who are not polluting the air to say, don't use fossil fuels. Don't use the V8, V engine vehicles, and the V6, and the fossil fuels, and the coal. You can run those vehicles. You can run your heating system. You can run your energy supply. No, go and install solar panels. We'll give you the money. And this is where the catch is.
And these are nations that industrialized with no K in the world, no limit in the world.
They never cared.
They burnt oil. They burnt coal. They didn't care. By any means necessary, they industrialized.
And
now, when we want to grow, we must do it at a bus pace.
Exactly. They give you money. They give you, like, what, $8.5 billion? Dollars to say, go and use this money to install the IPPs in South Africa, to can run electricity, shut off your electricity, and you'll improve over time. So what should happen between now and that time? But that's not the only effect, Fresh. There's quite a number of effects that will have an impact on South Africans. You look at the mining towns. You look at places like in Mbombela as well as in what you call Witbank these days.
Or Middelburg.
Amalahleni and Middelburg. The communities there, the people there, they rely on the mining sector in there. For one, employment, housing, development, and anything else that comes with an economic project like mining. And suddenly the world is telling the South African government, can you start shutting down those mines? Now, this is where it also becomes tricky. Whenever we talk of foreign companies that are not complying to shut off and leave, they are quick to say to the government, your people will lose jobs. But in this 10, because they want the coal and they want to install IPPs, nobody's talking about the job losses that are going to happen in those mining towns or mining areas. But let me tell you, it's not going to come easy. This document that the government has presented to COP28 in Dubai, it's not gonna, the unions are gonna stand up, although the unions are a little bit marginalized in South Africa. Unions will rise, communities will rise. The workers themselves, you know, people will stand up and say, but if you shut off this mine and you are going to put windmills or solar panels there, and what is going to happen to the families that are reliant on the miners to eat? I think it's good intention to clean the world. I think it's good intention to can protect the environment that we live in, but it must not be coming at the expense of the people and be forced into the throats of the people.
Absolutely.
And that's what these people are sitting in. I'm actually very disappointed with our country to can want to lead when we are not ready, when we are not in a position to can commit to such. So it will be a white paper. It will be a paper that is presented. And what should happen after, when President Ramaphosa and the delegates come back, what is going to happen in the country after that? I don't think it's going to fly.
Absolutely. Speaking of not flying, driving in a bus from Zim the other day, they found 43 minors, children.
It's children, actually.
Yes. And now Zim and SA ministers at loggerheads about this. What is the latest with that story?
Look, And again, I must put a disclaimer because it has border management, you know, involvement in, yes. in that I'm talking in my private capacity as an sure. analyst. The story that came up, the report that came out of the South African government, Dr. Minister Arun Motsoaledi and the Border Management Authority was that 43 passes. Mm-hmm. Now, when I hear that number already, it raised eyebrows. 43 mm-hmm. passes were turned or were caught on the South African side of the border post in Beit Bridge. Mm-hmm. Now, those who have been to Beit Bridge, I can tell you, from the South African border side to the Zimbabwean border side, what mm. people normally call no man's land. Mm. It is actually, it's not a no man's land, but for lack of a better word. From the South African side to the Zimbabwean side, that piece of land, mm. you go over the bridge, it is exactly 980 meters. Mm. Exactly, I can tell you, I've walked that path many times of my life. Mm. It's 900, it's not even a kilometer. Mm. And if those buses had crossed the Zimbabwean border side, and they've arrived on the South African border side, 43 of them, it means those people were processed by the Zimbabweans. That's number one. So the Zimbabwean authorities must have been aware that there are 43 buses full of children, none of them more than the age of 8, because what Minister Motsoaledi had said also is they all had valid travel documents. Mm-hmm. Or those checked. But the problem became when South Africa decided to say, no, we've caught these guys, let's send them back, because it may be, you know, traversing on elements of child trafficking or human trafficking, or for whatever reason, they send them back. The biggest mistake is you send them back, what did they do? If there was a crime committed, why there were no arrests? And I did hear Minister Motsoaledi saying it's an oversight from the border guards not to arrest the drivers, obviously not the children. But there's human rights element that would have kicked in at the moment, that if you arrest 43 bus drivers, what happens to the kids?
Exactly.
Understand the human element. Then the NGOs would have been all over the minister and all over the South African government. But that's exactly what they want, Fresh. They wanted the drivers to be arrested. The drivers would produce papers to say, but we are doing our job. We are not involved in this. We are not guilty. It is not the responsibility of the driver in a bus situation to can actually force these children to have unaccompanied minor letters or to be with their parents. It's not the judge. What if they were given documents from the other side to say, no, we have been cleared between the two governments? And I'm using the word what if very carefully.
Yes.
So when Minister Motsoaledi went public on this, they sent them back. Now the Minister of Home Affairs or Internal Affairs in Zimbabwe came gun blazing and said to his counterpart, okay, this is another clumsy part that I don't understand. Why couldn't he pick up the phone and call his counterpart diplomatically?
Yes.
And say, but what nonsense is this? Where are these 43 buses and over 200 children that were in those buses? They are not there. There's no police report. Mm. There's no official government report. There's no record from the South African side. So again, Fresh, it's very worrying that you can have such an incident at a port of entry, and there is no documentation record of what should have transpired there. We all know that all minor children in most of the countries, South Africa adopted that few years ago, for a minor child to travel, you must have a travel document.
Yes.
Despite the travel document, you must have a letter of authority from both parents. I just did one 2 years ago for my son who's in Brazil. You understand, he's traveling from Brazil to Spain. The mother could not move with a child until I go to the court and get a notary to authorize permission to travel. And these kids are said to have been traveled. But my main worry and concern, look, I've seen that happening many times, and I can tell you with authority, why was that happening? There's two or three reasons. One, it's time to prepare the kids to go to school. Our lovely constitution says every child has the right to go to school, a public school in South Africa. In 2 months' time, those kids, look at the age. It's school-going age.
Ah, yes.
They are supposed to
start
school.
They're ready to start school, yes.
Exactly. That's one element. The second element is, we just passed a bill. You know, a national health insurance bill. Every human being in the land of South Africa is entitled to the benefits of that bill. You know, Zimbabwe is still going through a lot of difficulty. And I'm saying this unofficially and you know, with my mind is, if that indeed happened, there is no way that 43 buses can cross a point of entry, travel from Harare or Bulawayo or Gweru, anywhere in Zimbabwe, to arrive on the South African border side. 43 buses full of kids. And the Zimbabwean authorities did not pick that up, it's impossible. It's highly impossible. And I think this is part of the problem in dealing with, you know, immigration issues in South Africa, amending them and changing the constitution of the country. Because when you get in this country, people just come in and out as they wish. Then NGOs are going to stand up and say that's human abuse. And now they can even say we failed to deal with human trafficking.
Yes.
So Minister Motsoaledi is actually caught up in a very difficult situation. You block them, you stop them, you are inhuman.
Sure.
You allow them in, South Africans are all over you, to say our children don't have space at schools. And that is the challenge the country is facing with. And that's where the spat came from between the two ministers. I don't know, look, diplomatic people should have come in and said to the two ministers, hold your horses, have a telephone conference, let us talk about this whole thing. Instead of going to the media first, now they're feeding us.
Now it's a circus.
It's a circus. Two very senior ministers.
Let's go to even more ministers. So Botswana over the last 2 years had a total ban on agricultural imports.
Yes.
To bolster food production in Botswana.
Absolutely.
And to encourage people to grow vegetables.
Yes, yes.
And to, I guess, reduce the dependency on imports of vegetables.
So, particularly South African vegetables.
Exactly. And now it seems like there'll be an extension on that ban. And South African Agriculture Minister Sis Togo Didiza is now saying she's concerned.
Yeah, she's very unhappy with this whole
thing. And she says it might affect other bilateral
agreements.
Which smells like if you don't want this, then there's others that we might... It smells like it might turn into a tit for tat.
Yeah, look, I pray that South Africa and Minister Togo Didiza do not go to that extent.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you why. Botswana is a sovereign state, a very small state, and it is dependent, despite on diamond mining, its agriculture is very big and important. But let me start from the Botswana side. There is absolutely nothing wrong. It is actually the right thing to do for a minister or a political head or a cabinet of a country to stand up and say, for the best interest of our people and our country, we are passing these laws. This was passed in 2021. It was effected in January, February 2022 for 2 years. So it was supposed to expire end of December 2023, this current financial year. Now, Botswana government, being people who plan and prepare properly, they've sat down and they said this process has worked very well. We are now extending it to 2025 with another 2 years. And that's what caused the spat. But for those who don't know, this is basically not all agricultural products. It's mainly horticulture products.
Oh, yes, 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 yes.
You understand? And again, it's to assist their, you know, sustainable farming, small-scale farming, and the Botswana farmers, to protect them against the giant South Africa. Because we are, when it comes to agriculture, giant towards Botswana. But if you want me to sit here and talk as a patron or of South Africa, I would say I think diplomatic engagement should have taken place. In diplomatic engagement, it's not about winning and losing.
Yes.
You engage, you talk, and I don't think Botswana...
We try to find each other.
Yes, let's try. But I also don't think Botswana just changed the date or extended the date. There was a SACU, Southern African Customs Union meeting that happened earlier this year, and they raised those issues, and South Africa countered those issues. But countering me tabling an issue does not mean I shouldn't do what I had planned to do.
Or what I need.
Yes. For example, people are still trying for SACU. I've heard Minister Togo Didiza saying maybe SACU has lived its lifespan, it's not working. But honestly, that's not for Botswana. Botswana has their currency, it's Pula. It's not part at the same level as the Namibian dollar, the Maluti from Maseru, and the Elangeni from Eswatini. Those are at par, one-to-one with the rand. Botswana is not on there. They're trading on their own. They've got their own forex, and I think it's protectionism, but I also don't think it was a wise move to threaten them to say, we'll revisit SACU. We may look at other trade commodities that Botswana is dependent on us. Like, for example, Botswana is a landlocked country. It's dependent on, for example, South African fisheries. You understand?
And the ports.
But look, if you fight like that, they will seek help elsewhere. I can tell you, Botswana already in Namibia and the ports of Walvis Bay, they've got land there for many years that the Namibians had given to Botswana and the Zambians right at Walvis Bay. It's like their own land, to can be, it's like their own port, you know, and goods arrive there and they trade from there. And if we are going to use a hard knock fist to engage diplomatically, I don't think it will bear us fruits as a region. But can this minister stop, man? We are neighbors, man. They can just take a car drive. Minister Didiza should have taken a cross-border bus and drive through Ramatlaba, man. Then
had a nice meeting having a vegetable salad.
Exactly. You know? With homegrown vegetables.
I had a good laugh. So at some stage, obviously because of the ban, it led to shortages of certain vegetables.
Okay.
Because obviously you have to build
capacity
over time. And there was a potato shortage. And I think some of the retailers, especially your fast food joints that sell chips make with potatoes, I think they'd called a meeting or they'd met with the Minister of Agriculture complaining that there's a potato shortage. can potatoes at least be allowed back in? And they were told, I've never heard of anyone dying because they didn't have potatoes. You must just wait until there's more potatoes.
That's my kind of minister. Why do you want to eat chips and chocolate? Wait.
No one has died from not having potatoes.
Okay, you can get an alternative.
So what's the problem?
Exactly. I like that minister. Actually, I would have done the same. Let's wait or let's plow more. Let's grow more.
Exactly. There's new bills. Like it's raining bills. Hallelujah.
When's a politician?
Yeah.
Start issuing bills at critical moments like Kiddy Zimbabwe's.
My man.
You must be suspicious. You know, let me tell you, one of the things, I'm not diverting, one of the things I was taught in the diplomatic circle.
Yes.
Part of my responsibility was security services. So I was in charge of the keys and the safes and the cryptography. One of the lessons I learned from our then national intelligence, and it used to be called SASS, South African Security Services, was that you never change the combination of the lock where you keep your money and your passports and face value. You never change it on Friday afternoon or Monday morning.
Oh, yes.
And you are rushing home on Friday, you are baba last on Monday. So that was one of the, and let me tell you, it works. Sometimes you even forget your combination. But Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, I never. Now, for the government to go, it's good that the bills are coming to table, white papers. But the timing, it's the NHI bill, is the immigration bill, and there's now this one of the independent directorate investigation. So they're bringing back the Scorpions back down.
So into the NPA?
Into the NPA.
Okay.
Which let me start with that one. The independent directorate is the same as what the Scorpions were, but they are not independent. It's a directorate inside the NPA.
Okay.
So what is the use? The question is, what is the use of keeping? They are now smaller, lesser budget, lesser personnel, lesser everything that the Scorpion had.
But do they have a sting?
Well, how will they have a sting when their powers have been reduced? How will they have a sting? Also, I think what would have been better for the country? Remember the Scorpions were good until they were politically abused.
Oh, yes.
And until they were used by ANC leaders against each other.
To settle scores.
They were doing a splendid job. But I think what South Africa need, instead of an independent inside the NPA, why would you still put it inside the NPA when NPA is not bolstered, it's not succeeding? We need a Chapter 9 type of institution with investigating, arresting, and prosecuting the way the Scorpions were. But it must be a Chapter 9.
Sure.
The same as the Public Protector's Office, the Auditor General Office. It should not be relying on another government department, an agency of another government department, where the majority will go to Parliament and vote to shut it down, because that's what happened with the Scorpions. They were specialized forces, and a vote was passed in Parliament to shut them down. But if it's a Chapter 9 institution, you will have to amend the Constitution in order to shut them down. And I think that will work better for South Africa. And for a change, I'm agreeing with the DA, because that's the position of the DA in this instance. But if we want to be honest, we want to be realistic, we want a scorpion or a hawk that can sting or bite, or a pit bull that can bite, make them a Chapter 9 institution. Let them be independent from other entities and departments.
Let them be protected.
Let them be protected. You know? And I think that's what will work. That's the story with this independent directorate. I call them, you know, scorpions coming back in a back door, but less venom or poison in them. What we'll see how it goes. The second one is the immigration bill. I think we spoke about it. You know, it's still up for public comments. You know, I think Minister Motsoaledi, there's already threats from various NGOs and the DA and other political parties that they're going to take Minister Motsoaledi to court regarding this new immigration law. Now, we have been trying as a nation to say people are moving in and out of this country as they wish, but we can't address certain parts and leave other parts. One of the issues that they're addressing, and I'm reading that bill weight by weight, it is the issue of addressing people who were married to South Africans. They've been living here for years. And now one of the proposals is if they divorce, one of the parties who's not South African must pack and go. That is unjust. You can't do that. If fresh, you have been living here all your life from childhood, and you have family and you have kids. So that's all they know. Now, again, these organizations, NGOs, they are saying it's against the human rights thing. Again, the constitution steps in. Understand? If these people are separating, you were in South Africa by virtue of being married, and you were there. So when the marriage collapsed, so those are some of the things that we should comment on this immigration bill in order to aid the government. And the people should know that if we don't comment, if we don't write, if we don't criticize, we can't aid the government.
It'll go through.
It'll go through as is. And, you know, the majority of those sleeping MPs will just vote with their eyes closed, whatever is tabled in front of them. They just vote for anything. The same way they did yesterday on Wednesday at the National Council of Provinces. Remember, it goes to the National Assembly as a bill, then it goes to the National Council of Provinces. That's how Parliament is structured in South Africa. Overwhelming majority of about 205 votes. But guess what happened with the National Health Insurance Bill? On the leading parties, the four top parties in South Africa, only the ANC voted for it. The DA, the EFF, and who's also the Action SA, whoever, they didn't vote for that bill. Look, the intention of the National Health Insurance is a good intention.
Sure.
It's a very good thing, especially in a developing and poor society like South Africa. The people in townships, the people in rural areas, the people who are unemployed, who don't have medical aid, they do not have access to good quality service. So the intention of this whole bill in a nutshell is to make sure that a person like me who's unemployed and who doesn't have health insurance, I don't have to wait for a queue in Kalafong when there is Unitas Hospital next to my house.
Ah, yes.
So the government is insuring the public.
So the intentions are noble.
The intentions are very noble. The intentions are very good. But are we in a state? Are we ready? Are we in a state to say we can do that? We are failing to provide basic services in our clinics. We even have clinics in townships and rural areas that are in a container format. And our parents and grandparents and uncles go there. There's no doctors, there's no nurses, there's no medicine. We are failing on that basic service. Now this is an insurance scheme. This insurance scheme says, fresh, you can go to any hospital in the Republic of South Africa for whatever you need, the government will pay for you. But pay with what? Where's the money? Which money? We have been borrowing money every week. When President Ramaphosa came in, it started being every 6 months, then it became every 3 months, then it became every month. Now we are borrowing money every week for various reasons. We just cut 13.7 billion of NEFSAS. The education, you know, a grant. We cut on education and then we pass a bill that will need trillions of rents on health services. And where will we get the money from? I like the noble intention. I'm one of the people who think we must have free, equal education and free, equal health services for everybody across the board in this country. But guess what is going to happen? Number one, those with medical aids are going to say, why should I continue having a medical aid when I can share a bed with Botsang who does not have a medical aid?
Exactly.
One. Two, again, our constitution. Guess what is going to happen? Everybody who is in South Africa, not even those who live here, not those who only those who are here legally, everybody who's in this land.
Including the children who are being smuggled in those buses.
Including the children who are being smuggled and everybody else and drug dealers and criminals. Everybody who is in this land and is a human being is entitled to the benefits of that bill because of our human rights bill in the constitution. It's enshrined there. Now, you can't take care of plus minus 62 million people that are your citizens that were counted, and you want now to open up to say, no. And by the way,
come all.
And comparatively, we have one of the best health systems or services in the continent. You know, people fly from everywhere to come for health services in South Africa. You know, these days, even plastic surgery is becoming fashionable in South Africa. But again, good intentions. I'm the one who have said the ANC-led government has produced the best policies, good policies, no implementation, no accountability, and they pile up boiling dust. So some people are saying this is electioneering time, all these bills to satisfy people. I don't think it's electioneering. I think it's things that has been on the pipeline, but there's pressure buttons that are being pressed to political office bearers to push these things. But again, when are people going to sit and read those bills when Mojaivo and what did Fikile Mbalula talk about Sanko? Who's this guy, the famous guy now who's jiving and dancing? I nearly said
Skomota.
Skomota. People are focusing on Skomota.
People are in Dubai this week.
People are in Dubai.
Some have taken both small mem shopping.
You understand? The timing is very wrong, guys. The timing is very wrong. It's only few of us who are not Christians who don't celebrate Christmases and all that. I will have time to can focus on that because normally during the year end and during festivities, I don't take leave because the nature of my job did not require. I had to work. When you guys cross the borders and go on holiday, it was bad for me. I had to work. So I'm used to that, but I'm going to be studying these bills throughout the festive season.
Yes, sir.
Come January, I will look smarter than all of you.
Done deal. I think let's wrap up with ANC veteran Mavuso Msimang. Ntate Mavuso Msimang wrote a letter to the ANC a couple of days ago saying, I'm sorry, guys, it's over. I can't be a part of this movement anymore. It's not the same, and it's not what I stand for. One, what are your thoughts? And two, am I wrong in thinking, yes, he's a veteran and, you know, he has what his views are, but this resignation will be of no consequence. And that, does he have a constituency enough that it will move anyone?
Yeah. Let me start with your two.
Or is it symbolic?
Let me start with your two. Maybe that's three now because you put symbolic in.
Yeah.
I think it's more symbolic for me. It's a veteran. I don't think Tate Mavuso, look, with all the respect I have for him as an adult, first of all, secondly, 60 years. You see, that's another problem. Once you're in your 80s and you start thinking that you can make influence on youth that is competing with Julius and Fikile Mbalula, it becomes a problem. But it's look, the ANC is a mass-based organization. It's talking in numbers. They are thinking in filling stadiums and buses and people tweeting and T-shirts and all that. They are mass-based. And I don't think Ntate Mavuso has a constituency that will fill up a bus, that will rattle the ANC. However, due to his stature in the ANC and other people that were looking up to him, there are several adults in the ANC that I personally, being a Pan-Africanist, I was still explaining to you that and the viewers that the ANC is a mass-based organization.
Yes.
They rely on numbers. They rely on those numbers transfers to votes, filling up the stadiums. It has worked for them for many years. Now, a person of the caliber of Ntate Mavuso comes more as an advisor, as an adult, a veteran, and to the intellectuals and with morality and all that. So to the numbers, I don't think it will have a huge impact like if it was Jacob Zuma or Thabo Mbeki who would have resigned from the ANC. Then it will have an impact.
Do you think it might do something to the consciences of members in the NEC? Because surely that is the constituency that he might hopefully be wanting to influence.
Exactly.
So when you start influencing the ones with influence, then maybe something might happen. But at an electorate level, this will be of no consequence.
Yes, at electorate level,
it but will if be the very natives, little. But if the natives become restless within the organization,
exactly,
then they must worry.
It's particularly the NEC. You know, yes. The NEC of the ANC is the biggest NEC in any organization in South Africa, and they are not just NEC members. They remember they are elected from branch and base levels. So if the NEC would have been convinced that losing the person of the caliber of Ntate Mavuso is to the detriment of the organization, maybe some few of them would start conducting themselves and behaving in a different manner. And when they go to their constituencies, they will talk differently, and they will behave differently in government position. But now, immediately after him and the fellow Veterans League members raise issues to the NEC, correctly so, about their concerns and about their thinking towards the Zondo state capture and corruption report, then the whole NEC went for them. Understand? I will not be surprised if other members of the Veterans League would start actually taking a back door or lying low and not advising and counseling the NEC members anymore. Remember the NEC of the ANC as well. Very few percentages, people 55 and below, very few.
Sure.
And the majority of them, they are supposed to be veterans and stalwarts themselves. So some people who were in the trenches with Ntate Mavuso are going to sit and say, but what is he talking this one?
Yeah.
And we can already hear that kind of talk coming from the Secretary General of the ANC. But let me tell you, they are missing an opportunity. You cannot talk of reinventing and reviewing your conduct and you don't want to take counsel from your elders. He didn't raise these things in the media. He raised it within the ANC. Now, for the ANC Secretary General and the entire NEC, actually, to stand up and say to Ntate Mavuso and other elders, no, but you must talk within the structures. You see, that's how people's mind in the ANC camp has been manipulated. If they want to deal with you, if you raise issues of, you know, pertinent, very important measure, they say, but do it through the structure. So they're expecting that the Mavuso to go to his branch, tell his branch chairperson, his branch chairperson must take it to the region to the province to national. It's not going to work like that. He is a senior member of the party. They created that Veterans League. The current leadership of the ANC that was voted into power, they created the Veterans League. There was no Veterans League as a formal structure. And this Veterans League, remember, it emanated from the so-called, or the previously called 101 concerns stalwarts of the ANC. My only concern with Ntate Mavuso and the others that I know they will follow is that, you know, during Jacob Zuma's so-called 9 wasted years, when we saw Action SA and other parties going for Zuma must fall, Zuma must resign, Zuma must go, these veterans of the ANC, they were the ones who were also pushing to say the Zuma admin is corrupt. You understand? But I've never heard Ntate Mavuso, including Ntate Snuki Zikalala, his president, talking in the same breath, same strength, same voice, and loud and openly about the ills of the sixth administration of Ntate Cyril Ramaphosa. They were not as loud as they were. And this is where the difficulty is now, to say when it was Zuma admin who had said to be corrupt, now records of the Auditor General and financial records, they are showing that actually the current administration, I'm not talking about allegations, the current administration is the most corrupt, the most ineffective, and they have lost key public administrators and public servants. And that's where the lament of Ntate Mavuso came from, to say we are losing credible people, whether they are in the ANC or not, but the government is losing key people due to what, to interference by political office bearers, to maladministration, and to corruption. Corruption is very evil flesh. You know, I sit and I listen to Ntate Mavuso and I said, I'm happy this is happening. And I can relate to that. I'm sitting at home now for over a year after 13 years in a state entity because of a political appointee who ironically was appointed by the current Secretary General of the ANC, Mr. Mbalula, who was the Minister of Transport. And when I raised in meeting, when I stood up in, you know, official meetings and engaged my principals to say, but your conduct, the way you are conducting yourself, it is not correct. You can't do that. Whether you are deployed by the ANC, the PAC, or the DA, you cannot use state resources to advance the interest of your political party.
Sure.
You know, because there are people in the public admin services and like DGs and CEOs and commissioners who are not deployees of the ruling party.
Yes.
Now, if I'm not a deployee of the ruling party and you are my CEO and you tell me that I should conduct myself and do things and channel events and my work so that I must make the minister to look good, whose minister? Is it the minister of the ANC or the minister of the country?
Yes.
And those are the things Stephen Tatema Vose has been trying to raise. And these are the challenges that the ANC is facing. But I think that you ask me what is my view and opinion. He will not make much of an impact. The impact will be very little, but not on the following, on the leadership. It's a wake-up call. Mm. And any human being inside the African National Congress who has a conscience will actually sit and read what they've written and what they've been saying. But you need conscience to do that. They should realize that they are helping the opposition and the haters of the ANC to bury the ANC. The ANC is making it very easy for those who are not in the organization by frustrating, you know, a key public servant. And it's going to be a problem. There are people like me. I've seen an interview with a former DG in government who said, I am not going to sell my soul for the benefit of the political party. Now, this is a former member of the ANC. Now, imagine a person like me who's not a member, who has never been a member, who doesn't subscribe to the ANC, and you want to come and use a political deployee to come and deal with an over 25-year experience in the public service. There is absolutely no comparison. Mm. But I don't think people in the public service must quit. Like Bontatema Voso, they are retired. I think they must stay and face the music. We must expose these things. We must challenge governance issues in government. Well, you may be bad luck. You may end up sitting at home without an income.
Like you.
Like
because
me.
Because we're not clever.
Hey,
you want to call people out on their bad governance.
Well, look, I haven't called them out, but something happened in the last week.
Yes.
You know, I've always said I will not talk about my labor matter with my employer, and I will still not talk about it in the public platform. But they are now bullying me. You know, they are threatening me. I got a letter from lawyers to say they will sue me for 2 million. Why they don't pay me? Two, I'm broke. Where will I get 2 million? Now, people want to know, okay, your name has been mentioned on a media report. I don't like newspapers. I don't buy them. I don't read them.
True.
Your name has been mentioned on a media report. Oh, yeah, I saw it. Now others say, and others, and then the employer goes and sends me a threatening letter. Now they're going to make me talk. They're I'm not a whistleblower, Fresh. And the problem in South Africa is whistleblowers. We don't have laws that protect whistleblowers. Ne? So even if it's there, it's not effective. Whistleblowers, they say something in hiding.
Sure.
They make allegations. I don't make allegations. When I say you have done something, I provide material evidence on the table. That's what administrators do. You provide material evidence. When I say a person is corrupt, when I say a person is unethical, I will provide material evidence on the table why I'm saying that. And I think I'm being pushed to do that. At least they won't haul me to Luthuli House. They can only take me to court. That's all. But I think proper public administrators, senior management in government, CEOs, commissioners, and DGs and DDGs, all these people in senior positions, they should stop lying low and digging and diving and hiding behind abuse of political office bearers. They must stand up and talk and put matters on the table. I will not make any allegation as a public administrator where I don't have material evidence.
Sure.
And luckily, I was trained by the old school that I keep records of everything.
Keep records of everything, record everything, document everything, paper trail everything.
That's how it should be. Paper trail is important.
If you take any other advice from anyone this year, let it be that.
Keep a paper trail. And look, even medical, your own medical records, if you can't scan and keep them for future reference, we know what happened with COVID and all those things. Paper trail is important. You know, people today have scanners. You can scan things and have a cloud and open and save documents there. If you suspect that Fresh is corrupt in this studio, guys, and he's getting some money, you know, back pays, keep a paper trail of that. When we come next year and we thresh him out there, you just produce that paper trail, then he has no room to breathe.
If you're not in a shallow grave by then.
you see how they bully and threaten people. You'll be dead. He's now behaving like an inkabi, threatening you not to expose his corrupt activities.
Dead men tell no stories, guys.
Yeah, but yeah.
I'm kidding.
That's tough, right? Yeah. Corruption, maladministration. But I think the ANC, in conclusion, the ANC Veterans League, in my view, they were not only chasing corruption. If the ANC members and leaders would have looked at it from an ethical point of view, it's ethics. Because, you know, if you are an ethical person, ethical leader, ethical manager, you wouldn't allow or do some of the things that are happening under your watch or your management.
You know what the sad thing is about a lot of our politicians? A lot of our politicians hide behind, I haven't broken the law. And they allow the single measure of wrong or right doing to be, I'm not breaking the law, versus what perceptions are you creating?
Yes.
Like, there's zero sense of perception management. There's zero sense of, it might not be illegal, but is it right?
Is it right? Is it ethical?
Is it the right thing to do?
Exactly. And you are correct. That's why I want to push it more on ethical conduct of our political office. Let them sit with themselves, like Abazalwani. You know, I've been told Abazalwani, they go and they create a lot of unethical stuff, and then after they go and sit in front of a pastor to confess. They don't have to come and confess to anybody. They have to reflect on themselves. Have I conducted myself in an ethical manner as a political or public office bearer? Once they can pass that line correctly, then we'll be on the right path.
And if all else fails, ask yourself this question: would Mama approve of my behavior?
You know, I told you the story about my mother. When I went to boarding school at age 12, and I live by those words, my mom said to me when I went to boarding school, go and be anything you want in life. You'll be in public platforms in future. Never, ever appear in a newspaper, kuranta, whatever you call it, for unethical things or for the snacks. And I live by those words, you know. 40 years after, those words are still in my mind. You are right. These politicians must go to mamas, but some of them are gogos. The mamas are no longer there. Oh, but they can reflect.
And there's also now a lot of gogos is politics of the stomach also. That food parcel will fix a lot of things.
Yeah, but look, it's good. Things are going to go out a lot. People are going to start talking. I have taken a bold decision myself that I'm going to start talking and revealing what actually transpired, because I'm banking on courts. The courts will do its labor, but other things, really, we have to come out in the public and talk about what transpired. I'm not being faced by law letters and threats by legal firms and things. You can't bully me. I'm a bull. You know, I always tell people I'm a Torian. And you go and you flash a red flag in front of a bull, you're asking for trouble. It will come raging.
Yes.
And this is where I'm heading to. Not for my own selfish reasons, for the best interest of the organization itself, for the best interest of the government itself, and for the people of South Africa. That's how we should conduct ourselves as public office bearers, because the nation will respect us more. The nation will believe us. When I tell people that if I was at Beitbridge when these things happened, for 13 years experience, I would have done things differently based on experience. Not to say my other colleagues there are not good or are hopeless. No, they are not. They are very good people. They've been doing a very good job.
Yes, sir.
But experience matters and counts a lot. And that's where Bontate Mavoso, with their experience, you know, they count a lot.
I think let's cut that.
Thanks, Brother Fresh.
We're done.
We are not yet done. We'll hear next week how it goes.
In fact, we'll be here next week to wrap up the year and talk about what's going to be happening next year in anticipation of the election year, amongst other things. We'll also look at highlights from this past year. Botsang will give us his thoughts and insights.
I will do so. I'll prepare to say wrap up the year. It has been a very challenging and bumpy year, but let's wait for next week for that.
Absolutely. Yeah. Where do we find you on social media, sir?
Botsangm@gmail.com and 0824859100. And please bring it on those bookings and advice and reservations. I like that. I charge these days, by the way. And I am at Botsang M on social media handles. And that's where you find me, Fresh, and the viewers and the followers.
Thanks for being a part of Wow What a Week, hashtag Politrix, coming to you from Amp Studios, part of the Africa Podcast Network. Shout out to Pezulu Works for the cinematography, our imaging courtesy of Otis the Flow Fraser, guest Botsang Modimowami Muilwa, our creative producer Kuvesh Mohan, and our show producer Keletso Modisa King. Email us at waw@africapodcastnetwork.com. Until next week, have a great week in spite of yourselves.